Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Wandering Road Podcast. I'm your host Chris, alongside my co-host Dean, and for today's show, we're going to be covering serial killers. And not modern day serial killers. We're going to be talking about some notorious people from the past that I personally think are not covered much in historical documentaries and serial killer documentaries. These are some heinous people that have killed hundreds upon hundreds of people. And for today's show, we're going to be focusing on Crispin Genipertenga, Elizabeth Bathory, aka the Blood Countess, and Thug Bahram. But before we get started with today's show, we want to say very quickly, if you would like to share your stories with us or would like to be a guest on the show to share any of your paranormal encounters, your cryptid encounters, your UFO encounters, demon encounters, please contact us via our email at twroadpodcast@gmail.com, and we will make an episode dedicated to our listener stories. Or if you would like to be on the show, we would love to have you on as a guest so you could share your experiences. Again, that address is twroadpodcast@gmail.com. And with that, we'll begin today's show. How are you doing today, buddy? I'm excited for this one.
Well, serial killers, let me tell you, man, like I am not crazy about the subject of serial killers because it hits too close to home. You know what I mean? Like, not that I've ever had experiences with a serial killer, but when you talk about people who are actual people and there's no spiritual or creepy supernatural thing going on in the background that's affiliated with the story, then it's just a really sad story about a human being who is just murdering other people and messing up their lives. So that's how I approach it, but that's not to say that I don't like history. So I think I'm much more open to talking about historical serial killers because it is fascinating to think about that perspective, like that happened hundreds of years ago and how people dealt with it. What were the ramifications of the serial killer's actions and how are they punished? So with that, I think we just jump right in. Like, what's the first one you got?
So this dude was a German serial killer who was operating in the 16th century. So that's the 1500s. So his name was Crispin Genipertenga. So this guy, I was really, really freaking baffled when I first encountered him. I shared like a short video that I sent to you about him and your response was, Jesus, holy fuck. This dude started murdering people around age like 13 or 14 or something like that. Over a 13-year period, he murdered reportedly 964 people. And what's fucking wild, he kept a log of people that he killed. What's interesting is that he didn't start off just murdering people. He joined up with like a group of bandits and they would rob people. And then when he killed his first victim, he had this innate desire to just keep killing. And what's even crazier, according to the stories that they have from the time, was that he would even kill his fellow bandits. No one was safe from his bloodlust. And he came from a town called Korpen in Germany, which was 2 miles away from, I believe, modern day Cologne.
One thing I want to say really quickly, looking at the history of this guy, I'm super confused because it says circa 1569, which I don't know if the circa is referring to his birth or when they started picking up on him historically. But if he died in 1581, then he would have only been 12 years old.
That's when they figured out he started killing people.
That makes more sense because I really wanted to understand how old this guy was, because I know you said when his youth started killing his first people. That is an interesting in and of itself, because nowadays I think psychologically we understand that if there are some indicators that some children have problems, it's that they do either self-harm or they harm animals. I think traditionally, or typically, whenever a serial killer starts developing towards that route, or if you look back on their life, like how did they progress to get to the level of serial killer? They typically, not, I don't even know if it's typically, but there's some of them who have experienced desires to harm animals. So there's nothing about that in this story. It just jumps right in and says he started murdering people in his adolescence, or like in his, you know, teenage years. And that is interesting to me too, because if you think about the dynamics of a kid killing somebody, what that would require, presumably he lived with somebody, unless he was like a vagabond, he just completely left home, which is, I guess, is feasible. For a kid to kill somebody, that seems really challenging, to like hide the body and to do all that stuff. So this one has me baffled, because for someone to live and start killing at such a young age and rack up such a high kill count, that just seems like a wildly crazy thing to have happened. And I'm not saying it didn't happen. What are some aspects that blew you away about this story as he aged and killed, aside from the fact that he killed like 900 plus people?
So what got to me was that he lived in a fucking cave. And when I know it sounds funny. It sounds funny at first that he lived in a cave. Dude, the cave complex, the way he built it out, he built the inside like a house. There were rooms, chambers with household goods. He even fucking dug up a cellar in the cave. And on top of that, there was a mine shaft connected to the cave, and that's how he would dispose of the bodies, apparently. Huh. According to accounts, he normally preyed on German and French travelers, people in large parties if he was by himself and he wasn't with a group of thieves or robbers, whatever the hell you want to call them. Groups of 3, 4, 5 people, you could possibly be safe. But if you encountered him when he was with a group of people, yeah, you were kind of fucked. What he would do, which is crazy, is once they would rob these people and they would help bring the loot to his cave, he would fucking poison them. He would poison their food and their drink so he wouldn't have to share anything that he stole. So this dude, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around this guy, because I don't understand what his motive is. I know they make the claim that he wrote in his diary that he wanted to hit a kill count of 1,000 people for whatever particular reason. Now, I don't know if they say he made like a contract with the devil or something to that amount for some sort of riches or some bullshit like that. But he would kill these people. He killed over 900 people. That's documented, that he documented himself. Could he have killed more? Quite possibly. But I still don't understand his motive. I don't think a severely mentally ill person would essentially dig up a house in a cave complex. Why don't you share your thoughts on this guy?
I was just thinking about what you were saying. That's what stands out to me about this story is, so when you think about a serial killer nowadays, you think about someone who has a severe psychological issue. You know, they either have some belief in their mind, they have some kind of idea that they are above other people, or other people are meaningless, and their sole purpose in life is XYZ, to inflict harm on others or whatever. I know I'm oversimplifying, but the story of this guy, it seems like there's no indication of that, right? It just seems like he is a marauder, which, you know, marauders for thousands of years killed people for loot and bounty and riches or whatever. But this guy, he took it a step further. He's like, well, and this is the sad part about this story, is like one of the sad parts. It's like, he was probably just a really good go-getter, but he went go-getting in the wrong direction. You know what I mean? It's like, huh, I already killed a bunch of people and then he was really smart. I'm like, well, I can poison the people who I killed others with and take all of their stuff, and that could be super rich. And then I don't have to worry about getting caught, because I can make this amazing home in my cave. Which, by the way, how did he ever like learn the craftsmanship to do that if he started killing and leaving home at the age of 13? So he must have either been really brilliant, or this story is bullshit. Let's just say hypothetically, he really was a kid who like took up in a cave and killed hundreds of people and was smart enough to take advantage of the marauders that he pillaged with. He was probably super brilliant. He probably had a crazy smart brain, but unfortunately, he just decided that if I'm going to start killing and be an expert at this, I might as well become a master at it. And then why not just kill as many people as possible? Because what's the point of life? That's the way I see this going. I just see this as a really unfortunate turn of events for a human being in human history.
I agree with you. And I think if you look at the time period, it was probably really fucking hard to catch people doing that stuff, right? It makes you wonder how many serial killers back then actually exist. How many people got away with murder and heinous crimes because there were no organized police forces. There were no surveillance cameras. It was all based on hearsay. So if someone freaking killed their kid or something like that, and they lived out in the woods and tossed their ass in a river or fed them to pigs or something like that, and then one day, like 2 years later, someone runs into them and asks, right, oh, how's your son doing? Oh, he died of a fever.
Yeah,
that's not out of the realm of fucking possibility, because people died of the common cold like quite frequently, which people don't understand. So thank modern medicine. People did die from the common cold. But there was a heinous, really disgusting part of his story that I debated whether we should bring this up. But I think for people to get the full scope of the story, it has to be the sex slave incident. He met, quote unquote, met the young daughter of a cooper. And for those of you who don't know what a cooper is, they basically like make barrels and stuff with like woodwork and whatnot. This girl, they don't say how old she was, so I'm assuming she was probably in her late teens. She was traveling to Trier to live with her brother, and he saw her, took a liking to her, ran into her, ordered her under death threats to come and live with him. He made her swear that she would never betray him. And for the next 7 years, she served as his sex slave. And whenever he would go out to find new victims to kill, he would tie her ankle with a chain so that she couldn't escape. And this really made me uncomfortable when I was doing research on this guy. He fathered 6 children with her. As soon as the kids were born, he killed them by pressing on their necks. As if not committing a infanticide was enough, he would hang up the bodies and stretch them out. And as the wind would make the little corpses move, apparently he said, and this is translated from the German, "Dance, dear little children, dance. Gnepertenga, your father, is making the dance for you."
That is such a terrifying aspect of the story and really, really sad. But I think about stuff like just to bring it back home to people who are like really bothered by such a story. You have to wonder, like, this far back in history, you're talking about the mid 1500s, and this story has been around for so long, you know, possibly even earlier than this time, like stories like this. So you have to wonder, like, what aspects were twisted in what way. So I do believe that, you know, obviously there were circumstances that led to people killing their children at birth. I mean, we, you know, look at China, like China had that for years, you know, the one child policy, or not one child policy, but like whatever drove the concept of like wanting to have a male over a female. It's something that's a really terrible, sad part of life. I don't doubt that. But when I hear stuff like he said such terrible things, I have to wonder, like, was that kind of added later to emphasize the severity of what might have happened? That's just kind of me digressing and thinking out loud. I will say that if, let's just say hypothetically, this story is real, the fact that he took upon himself to scout out and suddenly decide that he liked this one girl and convincing her to, or threatening her to come, you know, to stay with him and come back and not go anywhere, and also chaining her down, I just can't fathom that. Like, that is just something that is so unbelievably strongly crazy to me that I have a hard time wrapping my head around it. And this is something that has happened for many thousands of years of human history. Like, the concept of subjugating a woman for the benefit of the person who, you know, wants to use her. So that's crazy to me.
What's crazy is that that same woman would be his downfall. The woman pleaded with him multiple times to let her out of the cave when he leaves the cave to go to town. So one day he decided to relent and allow her to meet other people. And essentially he's like, okay, you can come with me. You can go out in public. You can meet other people, under the oath that she couldn't betray him. And I guess that was enough for him. Didn't really seem like a smart guy at that point. So one day they go into the town, right? Once they're there, she sees little children running around in the streets. And then she drops to her knees and has like a major fucking emotional breakdown. You have to understand that the reason for that is because this lady gave birth to 6 fucking children and watched this fucking heinous asshole kill them as soon as they were born. And this is translated from the German. Apparently, she said, "Almighty God, you know of all matters, including the oath I am bound to concerning what I should not reveal to any human. So now I will wail over my condition and despair that I, for the 7th year, have suffered, and what I have had daily to witness upon my own flesh and blood." So she began to wail and weep bitterly, and many commiserated with her. At this point, a group of people are now surrounding her. They're asking her, like, what's going on? Like, what's wrong? And she refused to reveal what was going on. So then they bring her to the mayor of the town. She was urged to tell her story, and the men, like the educated men, referred to scripture that if she didn't confess, it's a matter of her life and her soul, and she needed to confess or she won't go to heaven. Typical mind twisting there. So she confessed everything that she knew, and in order to catch Chrisman off guard, they hatched up a scheme. So they gave her a sack of peas and kind of like that.
Oh, the pie. Wait, no.
It's not fairy tale.
I know what you're talking about. That fable. Hansel and Gretel.
Hansel and Gretel, mm-hmm. Where they left the trail of crumbs. So they gave her a sack of peas to leave markings. Would be pretty shitty if like some wild boar started eating the peas while she was dropping them down. But she marked her way to the cave complex. And on May 27th, 1581, 30 armed men set out to capture him. When they got to the cave, he was asleep, because when she got back, she relaxed him with gentle words and like rubbing her fingers through his hair. And as the men barged in, the accounts say he said, "Oh, you faithless betrayer and whore. Had I known this, I would have strangled you long ago." When they went through the cave complex, they found wine, dried and salted meat, suits of armor, firearms, weaponry, trade goods, coins, and the value was estimated around 70,000 golden.
I tried to look that up, and
which
I
was
guess
the currency at the time.
That name for the currency is still around. I think it's like, I want to say like Switzerland or Sweden or like some weird country you wouldn't think that would still use that term. But the exchange rate now is like like 70,000 of that currency, and in the exchange rate today would be like $5. So I would have loved to figure out what the actual currency value was, because I think what they're trying to say in that research is like there was a lot of money in the cave, but I don't know how much the equivalent would be to today. I imagine it would be like at least hundreds of thousands, if not a couple million dollars.
Yeah, right. Especially with like armor and firearms and stuff. You know, it's even funny, this jackass kept a diary of which he detailed all of the murders that he committed, kept a tally of his loot. In addition to like finding the diary and whatnot, he admitted to the murders, and he said that his goal was to reach 1,000 victims and he would have been satisfied. He's like, okay, if I hit 1,000.
And he would have stopped, yeah.
I'm good. I would have retired. When he was found guilty, they condemned him to death.
Yeah.
By the breaking wheel.
So that enthralled me the most about this story is I had never heard about the breaking wheel, and I just did a deep dive on it, and it is just mind-numbingly gross and terrifying. It's so weirdly simplistic. It's not anything that is mind-blowingly crazy as a torture mechanism or a method of execution. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's a giant ass wheel that is meant to break the shit out of your body until you die. And the reason why it's so disturbing to me is it's not just the fact that you're having your body broken. It's that in some of the images, you are literally affixed to the wheel and turned. Some people are like, oh, you get stretched out. No, that's a different torture device. That's a different mechanism for torture. This is something where you are attached to the wheel, and they have stoppers on the wheel as you're getting it turned, and your limb is up against the stopper, and then the might of people pulling on you to turn against that stopper breaks your bone. That's one method. The other more simplistic method is that you're just tied down and a couple guys take this really heavy wagon wheel and smash the shit out of your femur and your arms and legs and just until you have no more bones to break. But the story about this guy that stands out as different from the general research about the breaking wheel is that they gave him heavy drink apparently over the course of like 9 days or so. So every time that he came back to, they would get him drunk so he would feel mildly better, just so he would come down, have the feeling of a hangover, and then fuck his life over again by damaging him, messing him up. And I guess it took him 9 days to die, but that is just terrifying, a terrifying way to die. And I guess, depending on who you are to say well-deserved, I don't know if anybody doing anything would ever deserve such punishment. I mean, just put him to death right away. But that is just, let's talk about that real quick, actually, like without going too crazy down the rabbit hole of like what it means to put someone to death for their crimes, how much they should suffer. Do you think that if this story is true, all the people he killed and the terrible things he did, killing his own children, do you think that was the right way to deal with a human being, or would it have been better to just put him to death immediately?
Oh man, this is going to sound barbaric. I think him suffering was probably the best
thing. That's a fair point to say, because I think most people who would hear even the aspect about killing children as soon as they're born, that is just like, how can you can't fathom. And right. It sounds like this guy, he was wherewithal to make the decisions he made. And he, for lack of a better term, was more aware than the average person. So to make those decisions, that is particularly heinous. So I don't think you would have too many people disagreeing with you, man. Honestly,
would I feel bad for him? I feel like there's like a little sliver.
Well, that's just your
like
humanity.
If you're watching this real time, it's like, oh fuck, mm-hmm. Just fucking end it already. And I wonder, did they take him off of it, or did they just leave him there?
Yeah, and also
that's what I'm curious about.
The other
about.
Factor to that story is you can't survive alone on alcohol for 9 days. You would need some kind of water source to keep yourself from dehydrating and from just pretty much drying out completely. And then I guess you could argue that they didn't give him any food, because I think you could survive for like 2 weeks without food, but you need water every like 3 days or you're done, especially drinking alcohol. The last thing I want to say about this story is that we should tell our listeners, whoever's listening, that this particular story isn't something that is historical fact. There is some belief out there that it's a mishmash of other stories over time that kind of played out the way that it did in this story as one person. So it's not a historical narrative that is proven. However, I will say, and any other psychologically based serial killer story I've ever heard in my entire life, this is by far the most insane. Because if you think about the dynamics of 996 people or whatever, that is unfathomable. That is like for one person to kill, like what's the highest sniper count in World War II? Like 120 people, or even Vietnam. When Vietnam had like a kill count of like 200 some or 300 some, I don't even know. For some individual over the course of a certain number, I would love to break down the math about that. It's like, if you could figure out how old he was from the time he started killing, or like living in that cave, like how many people would he have had to kill a day on average, or like a week on average? And it's probably some insane number.
The dude finished out his game with 964 kills and one death. That's one of what prestige
level he knew about
Call
of Duty. He knew.
That's why he had all those firearms every time he leveled up. But I think we'll move on from this sick bastard and move on to an even more sicker bastard. Have you ever heard of Elizabeth Bathory, the Blood Countess?
Did a preliminary research into her, and it is absolutely terrifying. So this is probably more, I guess it's kind of like supernatural in a way, because there's some vampirism in there and some spiritual belief or whatever. So why don't you kind of break it down for us?
Yeah. So Elizabeth Bathory, she was born to a Hungarian noble family, and apparently, I'll skip over her youth and everything like that. I think the most important aspect of this is that she was a noblewoman. And essentially, the nobility kind of do what they want. They were able to kind of do what they want without many ramifications, unless it was like to other nobility or if it got like completely out of hand. She is known as the Blood Countess because she believed that consuming and bathing in blood would keep her youthful and alive. And this is where the claims of the accusation of vampirism comes from. She is dubbed, like, along with Vlad the Impaler, of being one of the original vampires because of what they did.
So maybe this is, can you imagine that? Can you imagine having your name just like shit on historically? Like, imagine all this shit is false. Someone just came out and said she bathed in the blood of virgins, and when in reality she was just a normal woman.
She is accused of slaying more than 600 young women inside of her lavish castles. According to legend, quote unquote, legend, this is where the vampire accusation comes from. She killed more than 600 women and that she bathed in their virginal blood. So she would specifically select young girls that were virgins to serve as like her servant girls. Because put it this way, if you were a commoner, right, and you had multiple daughters and they were of mid-teens, late teens, or even in their 20s, and a noblewoman came to you and said, we want your daughters to work for us as their servant girls, you would take that in a heartbeat because the pay would have been, I'm assuming,
yeah, enough to get you out of poverty.
Astronomical, right? Exactly. So that's why she chose these girls, because they were commoners. She thought no one would give a shit about them. So she thought, it'd be easy. And it's like if a common man, like one of the commoners' family came and complained, what the fuck would they actually do? They couldn't do anything. So as she's committing all of these alleged crimes in her castles, right, people started complaining to the king, spreading rumors that heinous acts were being committed. And her cousin, Georgi Thurzo, was assigned by the king to investigate the matter. According to the investigation and 300 witness statements, it yielded some very gruesome details. The witnesses stated that Bathory and her servants lured and abducted peasant girls aging up to 14 years old and committed unspeakable acts on them. So some of the accusations, dude, I don't know what you make of this. They said that there were acts of cannibalism. The girls were beaten, burnt, and their hands were mutilated. Some were froze to death. Some were starved to death. Some were whipped with nettles. And this is absolutely disgusting. Some were covered with honey and eaten alive by insects for the entertainment of the Blood Countess, which I mentioned earlier. One of the most gruesome accusations was that the Countess would bathe and consume their virgin blood to grant herself eternal youth. And this is where the accusation of vampirism comes from. So apparently, survivors and mutilated bodies were found on her properties, which provided the evidence that was needed to put her on trial. But given that she was part of the nobility, she escaped both trial and execution, and they walled her up within one of her castles with only a little small slit in like the wall or whatever for them to slide in food and water. And on August 21st of 1614, she suddenly passed away locked in her room, and she just died that way.
Yeah, that.
All walled up in her castle.
Looking at this historical narrative, it seems like there is some significant speculation that this story about her was based off of political motivation. There's two sides to this coin that I think are really interesting. The first one is this idea that you have nobility taking advantage of the common people, which is something that we see through to this day, which we know happens. I mean, like that is like when you have a certain amount of wealth and a certain degree of understanding about how the dynamics of the current age you live in are working, then you can exploit it to your advantage. So like, of course, there are ultra rich people who are exploiting the common person. But I think that it might be a fallacy to assume that just because you have that degree of power, you're automatically engaged in like some kind of crazy degree of debauchery. Or I was just watching this the other day. Like there's this kid, or I don't even want to give any credence to this. Because I think it's just absolute clickbait. But there's just some video I watched recently about some political conspiracy where they took the guy took all kinds of clips from different wealthy or famous actors, and the guy conflated with what they were talking about to a certain political conspiracy that involved the exploitation of minors, and implying that, you know, the ultra rich, the ultra famous, like, will talk about this shit in code in front of other people as if they get off on it.
Who made the video?
Okay.
Who
made the video? I honestly don't even know who this guy is. I just like flick through the TikTok videos or the Facebook videos or whatever. It was this video about like this guy, like trying to point to like Pizzagate. And like you know what I'm talking about? Pizzagate. Okay. So I don't want to talk about it beyond that, because I really don't want to give this guy any clickbait, because it's absolute horseshit. It's just really terrible, like unfounded. Like you can just tell that he's trying to stir up some conspiratorial stuff, because I mean, I do believe that there are things in this world that are conspiratorial, and they are really like, they have some validity to them. But when you talk about this particular example, like with the Pizzagate and shit, like it's just like, okay, enough. Like, you know, you can't just completely disassociate and just say shit out there, because that's how we get ourselves in trouble as a civilization. And tying that back into the story about the Elizabeth Bathory woman, apparently this sort of shit was flung around back then in Hungary in this era. What was it, like the late 1600s or whatever? Apparently this concept of blasphemy, or just like shitting on a political leader or someone of wealth or stature, was so commonplace that it almost kind of is indicative to me of like whenever people would claim witch, like people being witches in like the Pilgrim era America, like Salem or whatever, like people would just throw around accusations because there was some claim to land, or someone had some kind of plight that was unexplainable on their crop or something like that. Like, maybe it's possible that whoever threw these accusations might have believed them, but like they didn't know for sure. But that's the extra degree that's confusing to me about this story, is that it's all hearsay and conjecture. And I almost kind of like liken it to a Monty Python sketch, like we were talking about earlier offline. It's like, I can imagine Monty Python doing something based off of this story. It's like one lawful nobleman walks up to some gentrified or like some like person who is of lesser stature, and they're like, "Sir, can you lay any credence to this? Have you seen this woman Elizabeth take any young woman and bathe in her blood?" And then the guy's like, "Well, no, sir, of course I haven't." "Oh, well, why don't you take this satchel?" And then the guy looks in the satchel and it's clearly money. It's like, "What do you think now?" "Oh, of course I saw her, sir. Of course. Oh, covered, my gosh, it's bathed in blood." And they just do that down the line like 300 times.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And he's like, "She even took my daughter."
"Well, you don't have a daughter."
His daughter's standing right next to her.
"Well, I did. Right next- I did, but she's gone." No, it's like, yeah. So I can just see this being a story of like snowballing accusations. But I will say, like, in a nutshell, it's extremely interesting, and it's clearly formative for our popular culture, because this idea that like doing something like eating the flesh of youth or bathing in the blood of youth will somehow keep you young, that is terrifying. And I don't doubt for a second that people have tried that throughout humanity. But to say that some woman in Hungary who had some serious political power and like sway in the environment, that she killed 600 some girls. I would doubt that there were even 600 some girls in her general vicinity in the time in which she would take these girls supposedly and kill them. So I don't know. This is kind of like, I would call this one bullshit. I don't know about you, man.
Yeah. I think the fact that she had money, because her husband died in 1604. She died in 1614. So she would have inherited all of his wealth. including all of her wealth. So for a decade, she was probably very influential money-wise. And in that time period, women and power didn't mix.
Yeah, I was just going to say, don't forget.
People didn't fucking like that.
Don't forget she's a woman.
The nobility and power. So what other way to get what she has? What other way to get her money? Because if she had a lot of money, which she did, she would have probably had a lot of people that borrowed money from her. And I think in your research, you found something about that.
I don't know who
you
this guy Matthias was. I guess that sounds like a pretty popular name, especially back then. But this guy named Matthias apparently had a large debt to her, which inevitably was canceled. Because I guess that was part of the political system back then, which was if someone was formally tried and convicted, any debts to that person would have been canceled. And that just goes along with what you were saying. Like, she was ultra rich. Maybe she was a really nice woman who, like, you know, really cared about other people. We wouldn't know otherwise because there was no way to document this shit other than what was written down on a piece of paper hundreds of years ago. Maybe she just, like, gave out money left and right, and then people realized, like, at the end of the day, like, they couldn't pay it back. So what do they get together and do? They come up with this crazy story about, like, just completely over the top about how she killed young women and bathed in their blood, when in reality, you have to think about the perspective of if you're an, like, okay, I don't really know what it's like to be rich. Hopefully someday we will know, but I don't know what it's like to be rich right now, but I can't imagine having so much money where I'm just sitting in an armchair, like in an armchair in my huge mansion. And I'm so bored where I'm just like, I think I'm going to go kill some virgins today and eat them, make them out of a lamp. Make them into a limb. No, I'll bathe in their blood. Like, I can't imagine, like, how you even concept or that idea, especially in the land of, like, Protestantism back then in like, old Hungary Hamburg or Hansburg or whatever it was called. That's just my little side rant. Like, I feel like this woman is just one of the many women catching shit over the many thousands of years of human history. I don't know.
Yeah, but there's always the side of the superstition and people in power wanting to live forever.
That's true.
And wanting to stay young.
Fair.
So there's always a possibility. Let's say from the historical record, it seems that there might have been some foul play in the sense that people owed her money.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a lot of money that people wanted. But there's always the possibility that she did all of this shit to feed her superstition to want to stay young forever. I mean, fuck, look at people with plastic surgeries nowadays. They all, at a certain point, they all look the fucking same, and it's kind of creepy. But yeah, I think she might have did some stuff. It might have not have been as excessive as people claimed it to be, but just enough that they could get her on that technicality.
Yeah.
To seize her assets, to get a little bit, be like,
to be fair, even though I am skeptical of the story, I will kind of reel it back to equilibrium and say that I agree with you that I think that power does corrupt unequivocally. Even if it doesn't corrupt, I think power also has that extra degree of making you do stupid shit. Like you said, like making your body look a certain way, and even some people dying from plastic surgery. Because they've had so many plastic surgeries worth millions of dollars that their body just can't handle it. So I agree with you. I think that, like, stupidity mixed with wealth will breed really terrible decisions.
Yeah, I think we hammered Elizabeth with the stake quite enough. But
that was a good pun.
Bad pun for vampirism there. But let's move on to the final candidate of the night, and we're going to go all the way to India for this one. Yep, Thug, or Thug, however the fuck you want to pronounce it, Thug Bairam, who was the leader of the
Thuggy
cult.
Can I just say real quick, this is like the concept or the word thuggy. I guess we just live in this, maybe it's because it sounds like Huggy, and Huggy was a delicious drink from a plastic bottle that we used to drink when we were kids that looked like a little barrel. The name Thuggy just immediately takes out all the the severity of the word or the idea of being a thug and killing other people. And I heard a term the other day, apparently in New Zealand. So, you know, in America, we have biker gangs. Like, biker gangs? That sounds badass, biker gang. In New Zealand, they have bikey gangs. Bikey gangs. What the fuck, dude? You know that shit doesn't fly. I'm going to go talk to my bikey gang, mate.
Bikey gang.
And we're gonna cut up some mischief. You know, I shouldn't really joke because those dudes are really hard and they do fuck up people's lives for real, like the Hell's Angels. So no more comments on the bikey gangs. But it just reminded me of the thuggy gangs of ancient or old India. So let's get into this dude. His name was Bahram. I don't know why I added that throat thing. That's not Hindu. Bahram Jemadar, or the King of Thugs.
You said Jemadar. It reminds me of the Jemadar from Deep Space Nine.
I wonder
if
they took that name from... Were those bad guys? I forget.
Remember those guys? Yeah, they were. They were. They were like super loyal to the founders. They were their warriors. They were like, I guess like a cult or something like that. That were super loyal. They were super loyal warriors. But Thug Bahram was the leader of the Thuggy cult. And for those of you that are not familiar with the Thuggy cult, so it's basically a group of professional robbers and murderers in India. And their founding, they think they started in the early 1300s. So they were active from the 14th century to the late 19th century when they got essentially taken out by, I think it might have been the British East India Company.
Mm-hmm. Sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think they might have been wiped out by the East India Company because they were just, playing hell and they were a fucking nuisance. So essentially what they would do is they would rove in like units and they would pretend to be travelers. They wore turbans and they could carried like around baggage, and basically they dressed to deceive peasants and royalty. So essentially the whole point was to get loot. And what they would do is when they robbed people, they would strangle them. And apparently the thuggies worshipped the Hindu deity Kali, who is, I don't really want to get too deep into the deity Kali, because
I was a kid, please, it, like, you have to get into it out. Now you have to tell us really quickly what that means, because I have no idea what that is. It sounds interesting. Get your rosary.
I have it. So it's just a Hindu goddess that's associated with destruction and death. And
there she comes. She's gonna call you right now.
I should rename her. There's the calico. Yeah. Right, she's trying to paw me. But she was a goddess of destruction that embodies power and creation in one entity and transcends good and evil, mother of nature, primordial, nurturing, creating, and devouring all at the same time. So they worship this deity, but the dark aspect of it. So that's why they would strangle their victims. And if you go online, you could actually see pictures of what these people look like. There's like actual black and white photographs, which is pretty interesting. So back to Thug Bahram, or also known as Bahram Jemadar. The Jemadar is essentially the name of the leader of a thuggy group. So it is claimed that he was directly responsible, or had a hand in 931 murders.
That's crazy. That's almost as much as that first guy we talked about.
Yeah, definitely. It's nuts. And he himself had confirmed 125. He says that he might have seen 150 more get strangled, but the claim is that he was present for 931 cases of murder, and as a result he was executed by hanging by the East India Company.
This is a strange story, and I'll tell you why. The story that's strange to me is apparently he died at the age of 74 or 75. So he was around in his life for quite a while. Not only that, he was alive during a period that was much more recent than the other stories we heard about. Yet there's very, very little detail about him probably without even going, like, you maybe you could find more going, like, digging into a book, maybe some old British archive book or something. But in open media and open source right now, like, there's just such a scant amount of information on him, other than the fact that he belonged to this one particular gang that did these really heinous activities. And he was apparently one of the leaders of it, if not the preeminent leader. So only 125 were confirmed, apparently, of the 900 or so. But that still says something. That still says that of the 900, there were still 125 that were documented and confirmed. So they were actually involved in killing, which is different than the past stories we heard, because we don't know for sure how many of these people were killed back then. So this is intriguing to me, because you have a group of people who are actually killing others in a serialistic fashion. You know, this is a side story. You probably have no fucking idea what I'm talking about, but there's this one movie that is in my head, and I cannot for the life of me remember what movie it was. It's a modern movie, came out within the last like decade or so. And there's this one scene in this movie where they show an Indian child or Indian children being abducted. And then like one of the children being abducted is part of their religious belief to have their eyes burned out or something like that. So like there's a scene where they take these children and the main character, I think it might have been what's that one movie where the guy goes in front of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire India? Do you remember that movie? It's like yeah, I think it might have been Slumdog Millionaire? Yeah, so I believe it was Slumdog Millionaires. It might have been another movie, but I remember this scene in some popular modernish movie within the last 10 years where the protagonist was abducted at a young age and abducted with other children. And at one point, the protagonist in India, the Indian kid, escaped. But they showed what happened to the other children who were abducted, and this cult in India like poured some molten metal or some molten liquid into the eyes of the other children to blind them for some goddess, or just to pray to some goddess. I think that does a disservice to India. Like, of course that shit's not happening. Like, it's probably less than like a 10th of a percent of that sort of thing happening, but still less than a 10th of a percent in a country of like 1.5 billion people at this point is a lot of instances. So when I hear this story about Thug Behram and the stuff that his cult did in the name of possible religion or possible religious beliefs, I can't help but think about stuff like that. Do you have any, you know, being partially Indian, do you have any stories that you heard of like that or know anything about that sort of thing?
No, the only thing that I know about them was actually when I took my Indian history course, well, specifically British Indian history course. It was called British India, History of British India. And that's when I learned about them. I had no idea of who these people were. The British Empire did a really good job of, well, the East India Company did a really good job of stamping them out. Because if you think about it, they were in existence from the 1300s. So they existed for over 500 years. And then they were just completely eradicated by the East India Company. And I think the reason for that is because these people started targeting
that makes sense.
East India Company assets.
That makes sense.
That's the only reason I can think of. Yeah, but other than that, no, that was never talked about or anything like that.
So one last crazy portion of this story, which we know now based off of our investigation that there were over 100 confirmed kills or strangulations or whatever by this cult that was led by this guy, Thug Behram. That's the other crazy aspect that jumps out to me. It's like some of the murders were ritualistic in a sense that like they used strangulation methods. They weren't cutting their people up with machetes. They weren't poisoning them. They weren't doing anything else, hanging them. They were just getting them on the ground, getting some rope around their neck or whatever, and strangulating them to death, which seems, it's pretty obviously ritualistic. So there must be some factor there which is not being said in this biography, which I would love to find out. Like, what led them to believe that that was the correct thing to do, or the reason why they would want to kill people?
Because the blood was reserved.
So no
for the
spilling
goddess.
Of the blood, and the choking was the quickest way to do that. Was it only men that they killed?
No, they targeted travelers, just anybody.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So if you ran into them,
Does it say how many people were in their gang at one
bad
time?
Bad day for you.
Who, like, how many people would be jumped?
I'm not sure, yeah. But it would probably have to be sense. More than five people, I would think.
He was convicted. That's interesting. He was executed by hanging. I wonder if he was executed in India.
Yeah, he was. Yes.
Legitimately hanged, like an old school hanging.
Yeah. So looking at all of the three folks that we covered here for this episode, for today's show, what do you make of them? Judging by all three of them, do you think they were mentally ill? Or, like, I always have a hard time understanding the psychological aspect of this. I never understood it. Because I feel like the thuggy guy, that was probably just religiously motivated since he was part of a cult. But the other two is where I have trouble trying to understand if they were true, if the other two were true, because there's always a possibility.
You know, that honestly, this is kind of a lesson learned thing for our, I think, for our podcast in a good way, because I think the meat of the conversation of all of these examples we touched on in terms of serial killers really comes back to this enduring question of what's the difference between someone who has a legitimate physiological alteration to their brain that leads them to make actions versus someone who has a baseline free will to make certain decisions that spiral out of control that lead them to the level of what we would equate to be a serial killer. So I think that you're right. I think that if, let's say hypothetically, each one of these cases were actual true historical serial killers, I don't think any of them, based off of the stories that we know about them, they were actually psychologically burdened or had any psychological issues associated with them. Because the first guy just seemed like he was a really smart dude who made some really dumb decisions about killing other people that spiraled out of control to where, like, imagine, you know, someone nowadays who is playing a video game. And I swear to God, I'm a video gamer. I'm not trying to equate video games to violence, but just let's say hypothetically you're playing a video game. Like, we've all done it. Like, all the gamers out there playing a shooting game, you let out some frustration, right? You're playing some kind of like solo mission in some open world game and things aren't going your way, or maybe you had a tough day and you just walk up to an NPC and you shoot them like 20 times in their face. But then you pause and then you restart the game because you just saved it right before you did that. You just wanted to get some frustration out. So I think about like the first guy. This is exactly what happened. He is just a guy playing a game in his head where he didn't save before he killed the first person. He just said, fuck it, I'm going to burn this game to the ground. And he just did everything based off of that first decision. The second and third examples, the thug guy and the woman who drank all the blood, the Bethany or whatever, I think that they are in a similar vein. I don't think they had psychological issues associated with them. I think that they were just proponents for their own time period. But if you and I were to sit down and talk about like an actual no kidding serial killer, like John Wayne Gacy, or I don't know, who's another example I can't think of, like more modern, Dahmer. Yeah. So like those dudes,
Ted Bundy,
only for the sake of the fact that they were alive and were studied in modern age, had psychological issues associated to their brains. We know physiologically that they had some kind of wiring based off of what their upbringing was, or based off of how they were just even born with their genetic makeup. They were more predisposed to doing something like that in this modern age. Whereas I don't think there's no equivalent like hundreds of years ago. Not only for the fact that we didn't have the data back then to capture what it meant to be a psychopath, we just don't have the actual facts and recordings, interviews, and all that stuff that we have today with modern psychopaths. So that's what I have to make about these stories. I think that there's an entirely different narrative when you talk about psychopaths and serial killers like hundreds of years ago versus today. It almost seems like apples and oranges.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the first two examples, I think the first guy, he was just probably too smart for his own good, thinking that he could outsmart people for a long time and commit these heinous acts, because maybe he was bored. Maybe he did something and was it. Like, oh shit.
Yeah, well, spiral.
I can't go back. Yeah, fuck it. Like you said, spiral out of control. Or what's even creepier is that he knew what he was doing. He didn't have any psychological issues, and he just didn't care. There was no empathy. But then that brings back the question, if he has no empathy, is that a miswiring psychologically? Something in the brain not going right? And the same thing with Bathory. Like, if the claims are true that she fucking consumed virgin blood and bathed in virgin blood, how fucked up in your head do you have to be to do that? Those two, I can say maybe there was some psychological issues at play. Or with the Bathory situation, the nobility viewed the commoners as subhuman. They really didn't care. They didn't see them as people. They just saw them as a means to an end. So they it makes sense that she wouldn't care for their suffering or anything like that. But the third guy, the thug Baram, to me, I don't think there's no psychological issues or anything crossed in the head. This was more so he joined the cult, and the cult was very dedicated to a specific deity that they believed required blood sacrifices. And that's exactly what they did to appease their goddess.
I totally agree with you. And we should do a podcast on this too, because this is, I mean, we touched on like the philosophical overlap with modern society and how the political landscape today is really shaping our coming future in a way that is unprecedented. Not unprecedented, but it hasn't happened in such a long time. So we really are in a really scary point in our human history. We're either going to go like hit the turbo boosters, and we're going to like make a lot of headway with AI and robotics and supercomputing, and we're going to make things way better, or we are really going to hit a wall and just like spiral. And one thing that I'm terrified about that could derail a positive future is the same idea you were just talking about, in the same vein of like someone like Bethany or whatever. Like, even if she was, regardless of whether or not that particular short story about her was real or not, we all know for a fact that there have been, and there likely are, ultra wealthy people in this world, not even just the country, but in this world, who, for whatever reason, maybe because their generational wealth has separated them from modern society or average society, like the society of regular people, they think that we are lesser. You know, to be fair, it doesn't necessarily have to, that doesn't necessarily have to devolve into the idea that when they think that we're lesser, that we are automatically rife for exploitation. It might just mean that some of them think that we're not worth talking to, in the same way that, you know, you and I wouldn't walk down the street and try to talk to a dog, even though we might admire a dog, we might play with a dog, we might not believe that the dog can understand us, so we're not going to try. However, what I'm more fearful of are the ultra rich people who do have that idea in their mind that taking advantage of us is conducive for not just them, but the structure of society and how things work. So that, to me, like you said, not 2 minutes ago, the scary part about psychopaths and serial killers isn't the idea that you can have someone who is like that based off of their own brain. That's scary. But what's scarier is someone who has a calm, level-headed brain, who might be in a position of power, who then decides based off of their own free will that fuck everybody else, they're just ants, and I'm just going to crush them all and dominate them all and bathe in their blood. And I think that we are coming to a point in our society with technology to where that might be possible on a grand scale. Fucking nightmare street, man. Holy shit. Computer chips in the brain, controlling all of our financial assets in one source, you know, basically holding us by the nuts in any way possible technologically. That's the stuff of nightmares, man.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of The Wandering Road. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, and most podcast platforms. Be sure to subscribe and share. Also, don't forget to give a follow on Instagram at @twroadpodcast and follow my TikTok at @twrpodcast. Take care, and I'll catch you on the next one.